We're starting Perek Lamed. You can see by the packet, it's a little bit lengthy. There's 30 or some odd verses over here. So let's at least get started on page 186, the bottom, the last word. It's interesting, you'll notice Rashi is only on this page, which actually starts, I made a little mark on the very first line, Pasuk Tes. All the Rashis of this parak are found here. So if we ever need to go back, we'll have to go to the first page. Anyway, we discussed last week in the 29th chapter how even though David was with the Philistine army and apparently looked like he was ready to go and to fight against the Jewish people, which of course he would never do, the Philistines did not want him there. And in fact, convinced Achish, who was the king, to send him back to where he came from. And that's where we're going to see that we're very fortunate, rather David was very fortunate, as well as his men, that he went back when he did. Because we're going to see that if he stayed and fought, in addition to the issue of him fighting and then causing problems that people would say, how could this be a king of Israel who fights against his own people? But we're going to see that something happened while he was gone, specifically to David and his followers' children and wives. Pasukal, Vayhi, and it was Bevo David Vanashab Siklag Biyom Hashlishi, and it was that David and his group of men who were initially going to be fighting, they made it to the place called Siklag Biyom Hashlishi on the third day, which means they were traveling from where they were with the Philistine army, going back to where they were, trying to reunite to their family. V'Amalek Pashtu El Hanegev. The Amalekim, once again, rear their ugly head. And Pashtu, as the Masuda Sion says, is Pazru Lishol Shlal, that they came out, they spread out to take booty, to take the possessions of David's and his family and followers. El Negev, El Siklag, V'yaku Es Siklag, they attacked Siklag, V'yisrafu Osa Ba'esh, and they burnt it down to the ground. So, we hear this, certainly we can ask two questions. When we hear the word Amalek, we have to remind ourselves the history of what happened so far in Shmuel. We know that one of the biggest mistakes that Shaul, the king, made was when he fought against the Amalek, he killed them all except for one, except for the king, King Agag. And a little bit afterwards, he died, right? He was killed thereafter. And the fact that he didn't kill during that short amount of time, he was able to have a woman conceived, and then his future children were born. So Amalek continued because of this. So this was only a little while later. So you can say, what do you mean? How is it possible to say that Amalek did all this? Furthermore, we learned even not too long ago, only a few chapters ago, that David, when he was already made a peace treaty with Achish, and he was living in the Philistine territory, that he actually attacked Amalek then also. So, first of all, how did he attack Amalek? There was no Amalek, apparently. And the other question is, how are they here now? And how are they able to accomplish anything? So, you can certainly say, when Shaul killed Amalek, it doesn't mean he killed out every single person except this one. It was the people that were in front of him, but they were certainly hiding because they're certainly cowards. And another interpretation is that when we say the word Amalek, it doesn't have to be necessarily a person who has in their DNA that they are direct descendants of Agag, but it could mean anyone that has that personality, the Amalek personality within them. And the Amalek personality, as we know, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, and they were Oyef Yargeya, they were weak, they were weary, they were exhausted, they were vulnerable, they snuck up from behind and stabbed us in the back. That's what Amalek is. Amalek doesn't have to necessarily mean, when we say the word Amalek, the nation Amalek. It could be people that represent that personal characteristic, that specific trait. As someone who is not going to attack you when you are ready to fight, but he'll wait until there's no one around, sneak behind you, stab you in the back. That's what Amalek is. And we look over here on the bottom of page 188, in the English, it says as follows. Upon their return to Ziklag, David and his men were shocked to find that their homes had been burned down and their wives and children taken captive by no one other than, as we said, the Amalekim. When David and his troop went with Achish, the city was left unprotected, thus making it easy prey. So again, this is the personality of an Amalek. An Amalek will wait until you are vulnerable, when they're all the men, all the soldiers are already out in the battlefield, and that's when they'll sneak into your hometown, when they know that it's completely unguarded, and steal from you, and burn your homes, and take captives. That's the personality of an Amalek. My question is, why? Why did Amalek wish to do this to David? What did David ever do anything wrong to them? So where do you know? And the Radak actually says, or did not underline, but it's upon page 188, the last five words of this Radak, which is the fifth line from the top, Shahari David Harud Kama Mehem. David killed many of the Amalekim. So you can imagine they were waiting for their opportunity. They would never actually walk up to you and fight you a fair fight. They'd be much happier hitting you under the belt. And therefore, they wanted to wait until David was gone. And that was the time that they went, took the women and children, and burned down this building, burned down their entire city. Pasuk Bet. That's their personality. Unfortunately, we still have people that represent Amalek in this day and age. Vayishvu es hanoshim asher bo mikotev yad gadol, and they took as captives the women from small to big. Lo he misuish, but no one died. They didn't kill anyone. They just had many as captive, kidnapped. Min hagu v'yelchul darkam. So as they took these people, and they didn't kill them, they led them off and went on their way, which again means that they brought them along with them, maybe as some type of a way to hold them so that they would be safe and protected, as David would easily be able to wipe them away, but they would not anymore want to do that because they're held hostage. Pasuk Gimel. V'yavo David v'anashav el ir. So David and his men traveled to the city, fortunate that they didn't have to fight other Jews, hoping just to go back home in peace. V'hini serufa be'esh. And what did they witness but this huge, huge fire? Their entire city was burned down to the ground. U'nsheihim u'bneihim u'noseihim nishvu. And what's more, they also saw that all the people that they loved so dearly, all of them were held hostage. V'yisa David ba'am asher ito es kolam v'yivchu. So what would be the natural reaction for people? So they raised their voice, v'yivchu, and they cried. They cried. Ad asher ein b'hem koach livchu. You can imagine this visual. They cried so much that they just had no more tears to shed. They'd had no more strength even to cry. They were so devastated. They were such a loss. They were so upset and emotional that they couldn't even cry anymore. That's how much they cried.
Rabbi, what is this? I don't know. Anybody else getting confused like I am? It's still repeating it. They came and they saw this, right? What happened? And then when David's men arrived at the city,
The way that I understand it is, it first gives like the narrative of what happened, and then David and his men went and saw that which had happened. But you're right, it doesn't seem extremely necessary, but I think the first psukim are really just spelling out what happened, and then thereafterwards David went with his men and saw it. That's how I think it is. But it does seem a bit repetitive, because it could just go right into the fact that David walked in there with his men and saw this. But what happened when they did see it is they cried, which actually is an interesting way to view this, is because we're dealing with soldiers. We're dealing with warriors that killed. I mean, they killed by the thousands, but nonetheless.
For their lives.
Right, exactly. So even though you can find the most violent of men, which I wouldn't call Dubin using that term, but certainly, you know, people that can, without snapping their fingers, can take a human life, yet they also have the ability to cry. They have the ability to show empathy, care, and compassion. Obviously, being that this was their own family, so that, you know, goes without saying. Pasuk Hey. Ushtei Nishei David Nishvu. Also, David's wives were held captive. And if we forgot who they were, they spell them out for us. Achinoam HaYisraelis, and the more famous, of Abigail, who used to be Asha's Nabal, whose first husband who passed away was Nabal HaKarmeli. Now, the reason why it mentions these names of Achinoam and Abigail is not as a recap, just in case we have short-term memory loss, we can't remember what their names are, but it's trying to emphasize that possibly one of the answers is that this is really the reason why they went, the Amalekim did, in the first place. It was because, not of all these other little pawns on the chessboard, but for David, they really had a vendetta against him, because David was the one that caused so many Amalekim to die. And therefore, it was really the whole purpose of their attack, of them burning down and taking everyone else, was for these two women, by holding in captivity these two women that were married to the great David, Achinoam and Abigail. Furthermore, it could be read in a different manner. David, it said already in Pasuk Dalet, that David and the nation cried, right? And then after that, the Pasuk says, and it mentions that David's wives, Achinoam and Abigail, were held in captivity. Which teaches us the very interesting lesson which can be derived from here, is that David, why was he crying in the previous pasuk? Not necessarily because of his own loss, because it was for his own loss, he should have first mentioned that his wives were taken, and then he cried. First it mentions he cried, then it mentions about his loss, which shows the greatness of a leader such as David, because David was a person that was not only concerned about his own loss, his own personal loss, but rather he felt the pain of others, so much so that he cried, "Ad asher ein behem koach livchos," until the point that he had not another tear to shed. And it wasn't because of his own loss, but he felt the pain of others, of all the people that were around him. That's another way that this can be interpreted. Okay. Pasuk Vav, Vateitzer LeDavid Ma'od, Ki Amram L'Saklo. So what would be the natural reaction? Probably the men of David, who were so loyal to him for so long, David, who was such a great person, you would never turn your back against David, they would say, okay, David, let's go after those people. Let's go after Amalek. That's it. But that's not what happened. Interestingly enough, even the great David, the Jewish people that were with him, turned against him, Ki Amra Amosakla, to the point, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the greatest rabbi that ever lived, because that's his last name, Moshe, the great rabbi. Yet, when it came to him, he also was almost killed by his followers. That's what it says here, that David's men were so upset that they were potentially going to stone him. They're going to kill him. Ki mara nefesh kol am. The people were very bitter about what happened. Ish al benav v'al benosav. After all, look what happened to their sons, their daughters. They were taken away. Yischazek David b'Hashem elokav. But David was able to get some level of chizuk, some type of strength, through connecting back to Hashem. And It's interesting, if you look at the English on page 189, it tells us how often we love and we appreciate and we think people are great if they did something great for us yesterday. If they did something great for us a week ago, we forgot about it. What have you done for me lately is the famous expression. That's what it says on 189. Sadly, it's uncommon for loyalty to dissipate. It is not uncommon for loyalty to dissipate quickly when a leader's aura of invincibility is destroyed and he is seen to be vulnerable. Even David, the king, would find that friendship can be very fragile. So David, at this point, sees that even though he had all these loyal men that followed him around, they're no longer so loyal. They're very, very upset, very disappointed in David. Now, some people learn that this was actually, the reason why they were upset was because he showed, as it's kind of hinted over here, that he did not have emunah. He didn't have the faith in Hashem. Because David should have the faith in Hashem and say, let's just go after them. What did he do? He cried uncontrollably. It's okay to cry, but the fact that he was just sitting there crying, above and beyond, much more than he should have, showed that maybe he really had no idea what to do. He showed a lack of decision-making skills, a lack of control, and therefore people said, where is your faith? You're supposed to believe in Hashem, and that may be the reason why the pasuk concludes, "Vischazik David b'Hashem Elokav," that David began to once again regain his strength and emunah in Hashem. And his men were saying, where is this emunah? Where is your faith? So they got very upset at him. They were very disappointed that he was falling down spiritually, that he didn't feel secure that Hashem would be there for them. So that's one interpretation. Another way that we can learn this pasuk is that David, as we're going to see, does not get mad at the men. He does not get offended by them. In fact, he looks at this as though they don't really mean it. They don't really mean so much that they want to kill me, they want to stone me. The reason why they're saying this is ki mara nefesh ko'am, because they're bitter in spirit. And how often do we experience ourselves, even though we shouldn't, and others, that we say things that we regret, we say things we don't really mean, things that we don't want to say, but we get caught up in the moment. We get caught up, and therefore, because of that, our emotions just get the best of us, and we lose control. And the next day, we apologize, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, I didn't mean it, but nonetheless, feelings have been hurt. But David, understanding that even though they were really, really angry at him, and that to the point that they almost wanted to kill him, they didn't really mean it. But rather it was kimar nefesh. They realized, you know, he's just a little bit upset. So sometimes if you would take this attitude of David and realize that when people say things to you and they could be extremely painful, extremely hurtful, taking a step back and understand the context of what's happening, who knows, maybe the person's really not upset at me, maybe they're upset at their boss 10 minutes ago and they're not going to say what they said to me, to their boss, because they'll get fired. So, you know, this is what choice they have. They're not really shooting these words toward me. And that's how David may have felt as well. So therefore, it didn't really bother him. Another interpretation of what does it mean when it says at the end of this pasuk, "Bischazik David b'Hashem Elokav," what exactly is this chizuk? How could he give chizuk? I'm going to give you chizuk. I'm going to make you feel good. How can you make me feel good? Look what just happened to my entire family. Look at my cities burned to the ground. So the chizuk that David may have given, it doesn't say, is that he said, look what happened. Really, we shouldn't be here at all. We should still be on the battlefield. What would have happened if we would be on the battlefield for days, for weeks, for months? We come back, there'd be no chance whatsoever of ever being able to recover our family or our possessions from Amalek. Yitzchazek, he gave them strength to say, look at Hashem's hand, that he purposely had us come back when we did, so that we'll have the opportunity to be able to fight back against Amalek, to be able to get that which really belongs to us.
But the Yitzchazek in that form really means he strengthened himself.
Right. Well, it could be that was part of it too. Probably he needed to think of that idea for himself to understand why did this happen, how could this happen. But the truth is, it happened for. It was good that he was able to come back at least when he did, so that
he
could give him because
himself. He then in turn could help strengthen.
Right, that's true.
I think to me it shows that he,
very good.
Humanity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, made him a great leader eventually, but at that point he empathized, you know, with people who had lost everything. He hadn't lost his children, who's, you know.
Right.
Not their wives aren't important.
Right, that's you're, no, it's actually another, what you just mentioned is a very, another point that's brought down, because if you look at the Pasuk says that they were upset, Albana v'Albanosav.
Right.
So the question is what they, yeah, the wives, take, what's that, take my wife, please, Penny Youngman? So, that's, they were only upset about their kids being taken, so the idea could be in contrast to David. They said, David, you're not so upset. Look at what we've lost. We lost even more. We lost our children, our family. Everyone has been taken away. Some also interpreted a little bit differently that the reason why they focus on the children is because when it comes to my wives, the adults, they can hold their own. They are already women of faith. They have emunah. And they're stronger-minded people. Our children are vulnerable. They're naive. They can easily be influenced and assimilate, so their concern was more on the children. But that's another way that's looked upon. All right, let's move on. Pasuk Zayin. So here we have this tension, not among the Plishtim or Amalek and David, but within David's very own camp. V'yomer David, so what can David possibly do? The same thing that Shaul tried, but this time David is successful. That David said to El Eviasar HaKohen, Ben Achimelech, who was in Nov, the city of Kohanim, he said, Hagisha Nali to Ephod, please bring for me the Ephod, one of the garments of the high priest of the Kohen Gadol. Yagish Eviasar Eso Ephod El David. And certainly, sure enough, Eviasar brought the ephod toward David. And the question, what was he doing it for? Because he wanted to ask the question to the Urim V'Tumim whether or not they should go and attack Amalek.
Which means that this traveled with him.
Right. I mean, it was with Eviasar the whole time. We mentioned that when Shaul also asked the Urim V'Tumim what to do about the Plishtim, which they're about to fight, which is a Periklam and Aleph, and he actually had to send a messenger into David's army to be able to ask the Urim V'Tumim, which were by Eviasar. V'yishal David b'Hashem l'emor. So David asked two questions. Eredof achrei hagdud hazeh. Should we pursue after this army? And question number two, hasigen. Are we able to overtake them? Which means, are we going to be victorious in beating Amalek? The Yomer Lo and the Ephod responded, Radov, pursue, ki hasig tasig, v'hatzil tatzil. You should go and pursue them, because you will be able to overtake them, and you will tatzil, you'll be able to rescue, you'll be able to save the people therein. Now, even though it seems like a pretty clear pasuk, the Radak points out that David did something apparently that was wrong. Because anyone that knows the proper procedure of asking questions to the Ephod, the Urim V'Tumim, it's, you cannot ask 100 questions. You can't play 20 questions. You can only ask one question at a time and then get an answer. You can't ask two questions because, I mean, it all lights up. The problem is that when you get an answer, you may not necessarily even know which questions being answered. If we look at the Radak over here, the Radak tells us, "V'shol David shtei she'elot." David asked two questions, ka'achas, at the same time. That's a loose translation. We'll translate it differently in the Mishnah Sot Zahav in a second. He answered two questions at the same time. The apple piece shlo ha'yosin kein born b'tumim. Even though you're really not supposed to do that, kamo shiperashki l'malas. We mentioned previously in chapter 23. Asa Cain, he did so. Why? Right, because Ladocha Kasha, he wasn't about to start playing around with procedures and reading all the directions. Right, it was an emergency. Venena al Shtehem, and therefore he was answered on both of them. So therefore, even though generally speaking you're not supposed to ask two questions at once, nonetheless, the Rebbe Tumim responded because it was a time of urgency. He had to respond immediately. Should I attack? Because every second I wait, a mole could be getting further and further away, and the people that are pikuach nefesh, that are going to potentially be murdered or who knows what, the chances of us of getting them will become more and more remote as time goes by.
And perhaps we see that in Haseh Tasik, Haseh Tasil, the urgency of it.
Right, very good. By repeating is go, do it, do it. Don't delay, don't wait, just go, go. Very good. Now the Mishnah Sot Zahav says, even though this is not the actual reading of the Radak, but when the Radak says, V'shol David Shtei She'elos Ka'achas, the Mishnah Sot Zahav says, he really wasn't asking two questions. It was really one question. It was one question, because what were the two questions? Should we chase after them? And will we be victorious So the question is, the first question is, should we chase after them? Obviously, it wasn't so we can go and have a cup of tea together, right? It was so I can fight them. So it was obvious that the reason why we want to chase after them is to fight them and to be able to be victorious. So really, he was only asking one question, unlike the reading of the Radak, that some say that the way to read this one line of the Radak, not the rest of it, is that David asked Shtei Shelos Ke'achas. The two questions were really like one question. It wasn't really two questions. It was the same question. Whether or not we should fight, and obviously if we're going to fight, we want to win. So the answer is go and you will.
You could see the two answers there. To me, I could see that Haseh Tasik would be yes, pursue them. And you will be successful.
But what's the way the Mishnah Zahav asks is like, what's the purpose of pursuing them if you're not going to be successful? What will you be accomplishing by just running after them if you know that you won't be able to get anyone back and maybe there'll be more bloodshed?
Yeah, but he wants to know if he will be successful. Right.
And that's why the Radak said it really is two questions, because as you're saying, you can actually see it's broken up as two. But some Mefarshim learn and say he was really asking one major point was, is it beneficial for us to fight them? And the answer is yes it is. Pasuk test. V'yelech David hu v'sheish meos ish. David didn't want to take any chances. He went with a huge army. 600 men. Asher each other were with him. V'yavo ad nachal habsor. So they went to Nachal Abasor, Vanasorim Amodu, and then the rest of them stood still. So we're going to see that some of them stayed, some of them went, because they were either weak or they were weak in faith. Pasuk Yud, Beard of David who be Arbameos Ish. See, all of a sudden we jump from 600 down to 400. Right. V'yamdu Mosayim Ish, the rest of the 200, Asher. Pigru, that where Pigru is brought down to Masuda Sion, is Nechalshu, that they were weakened, could be weak physically or spiritually. Mi'avor Esnachal Habsor. So you see, as we mentioned, that he had 600, 200 were weak, and that means there's 400 left. V'imsu Ish Mitzri Basada. So now, with David and his 400 men, we're going to see another 400 in a moment on the other side. But before that, they encounter a man. And this happens to be an Ish Mitzri, an Egyptian man. Basada, he was in the field. And this man was starving literally to death. V'yichu oso el David, they took him to David because he may be an enemy, maybe he might be a spy, he may know some information about where Amalek is, because we really don't know where he is, but we are ready to fight them. V'yitnu lo lechem v'yochol v'yishkuhu mayim. They gave him bread to eat and some water to drink. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayitnu lo pelach deveila. In addition to the basic staples, they also gave him a pelach, which is Masudasin is a chaticha, a piece Devela of pressed figs, Ushnei Simukim, and two, as Masuda Sion says, Anavim Yaveshos, dried grapes, which I guess are raisins. The Yochal, he ate those two, so he got a little bit of sugar in him, a little bit of strength. Therefore, the Tasha Ruchela, he was able to regain his spirit, his strength. Ki, next page, ki lo achal lechem lo shasamayim shosh yamim shosh lelos. He literally was starving. He did not eat or drink anything for a period of 3 days and three nights. Now, were we doing this because in the midst of things, we wanted to display our tremendous levels of achnasas orchem, of our hospitality? No, we're doing it because he was too weak to even give us any reports. We needed to at least make him feel better, give him a little bit of strength, and also to show that we cared about him. Now maybe he will join our side. V'yomelo David, and David asks, Lami ata, who are you? V'eimi ze'ata, and to whom are you? Do you belong? Because you're an eved, you're a servant, but to whom? V'yomer nar mitzri anochi, I'm a lad, Egyptian. Eved l'ish amaleki, lucky you, because I know you're looking after those amalekim. I happen to be an eved, a slave to them. So whatever I am about to say, don't get mad that I did all these terrible things against the Jews, because after all, I was an Eved, and what choice did I have but to listen to my master? Yazdeni Adoni, but my master I don't really care about so much anymore, because he has forsaken me. Ki chalisi hayom shloisha, because I was sick, and for those past 3 days, I have been all by myself. So the fact that I'm no longer able to be of any benefit to him, so I'm worthless, I have no benefit. So therefore, he casts me to die. That's their attitude. That's what my Amaleki master was. He looks at me and says, what added value do you have? And if there's nothing, then I'm going to give you nothing, and I'll just let you die because you're worthless. However, in contrast to that attitude of Amalek, is the attitude of the Bnei Yisrael. That the Bnei Yisrael will take this person in, someone who has no connection to whatsoever, and gives them food and water and that which to eat so that they'll be able to be sustained and live. Even though maybe he will not give us anything. We didn't ask him questions first and then say, if you give us the right answers, we'll give you some good food, right? Maybe the reason for that is that he would purposely give us answers which were not true because he wants the food. So now that he's already full, so what is he going to gain, right? We may not give him anything else. So now he's going to be honest, hopefully. So this is what he said. I was cast away by my master. Pasuk Gadal. Anachnu poshadnu negev. We spread ourselves out as an army in the Negev HaKreisi, the south of this place, the Kreisi. V'al Asher Yehuda. We went and attacked and took everything which belonged to Yehuda. V'al Negev Kalev, the south of Kalev. V'asiklag Sorafanu Be'esh. And I don't know if you heard this terrible news, but there's a city by the name of Siklag that we burned to the ground. And obviously David's eyes and ears open wide as he heard this, realizing that this guy was part of it, and therefore probably knows where they went after they burned Siklag and where they went with all their family. V'yomer lo David, so David said to him, Hosi Udeni El Hagdud Hazet, come down and show me this army, exactly where they are encamped. We want you to point us to the right direction. But Yomer, so this guy who was pretty smart, he said, Hishavali Belokim, I want you to swear in the name of your God. Im Timiseini, that you're not going to kill me. Im Taskireini Biyad Adoni, even worse, I don't want you to give me back in the hands of my master after he finds out that I was a traitor. He'll probably torture me. I'd rather just be killed than that. Varidcha el hagdud hazeh. And if you promise me that you will not do these things, then in fact I will point you in the right direction. I will show you this army and where Amalek is. And we're going to see in Pasuk Tet Zayin starting next week that in fact he does point them in the right direction, and that David and his army will fight Amalek. We'll see if they are victorious, if they're able to get any captives, and if any of the people from Amalek are able to escape.